thanks very much for the introduction, David. The speakers, my research field is in carbon cycle and surface earth geochemistry. And it's very tempting to follow the lead of some of the previous speakers and immerse myself in discussion of the carbon cycle and how we might manipulate or change that in the future. But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to take a rather broader remit here for my opening remarks and focus on a broader range of environmental issues that we need to be concerned about right now. I'll talk under three broad categories and hopefully try and keep this brief. The first is the experiment that we've run on our planet and what we can learn from that. The second is the relationship between environment and health. And the third one is on our food supply. So on the environment, on the experiment that we've run on the planet, of course, the COVID outbreak has led to this huge change in behavior that other speakers have alluded to already here. We've talked about greenhouse gas reductions. Another thing that's changed substantially is the air quality. And we might link this to some of the remarks that Kimberly said about the need to reduce cars. Well, we can look to a future without cars because we've just been through a period without very much road traffic. And we can see through that experiment the impact of a dramatic reduction in road traffic on air quality, on our, particularly for us in Europe. What we see when we look at that data, and you will have seen some of this reported in the media, is that for one of the pollutants we care about, particularly nitrous oxide, that we have indeed seen a substantial reduction as a consequence of lower transport and other changes. That's not been true, though, for all pollutants. And one of the others that we care about substantially, fine particulate material, PM2.5, at least in the UK, has remained really remarkably constant, with some spatial pattern, but fairly constant. That's controlled somewhat by weather, but we don't think it's weather that's driven this this observed lack of change in the particulates. It's not to do with Europe, because Europe is also in lockdown, so they should have reduced. So there's an opportunity here to learn from this experiment that we've run on our planet, to learn something more about the relationship between air quality and between our transport needs. And it's likely that PM2.5 is controlled by quite a diversity of different things, as well as car transport. That can help to inform our policy as we go forward. And it's one of the things that the Department for Transport is thinking about in the UK. They certainly have this sense that they can learn from this process, and they're not expecting that this is a straightforward return to the old world of pre-COVID when we finally can renew after COVID. So that's one experiment. We've heard from other speakers already that we've learned other things about biodiversity and changes in nature as a consequence of this. And there's lots we can learn and bring into our policy sphere from this experiment we run on the planet. So a second thing to point out here is the relationship between environment and health. And there are several strands to this. And the first one that I'll pick on follows directly from my previous remarks about air quality. It's pretty clear now in evidence from other countries and probably from the UK data that there's a relationship between your chance of dying of COVID and the air quality in the area that you live in. And this is very likely driven by the fact that bad air quality leads to a number of health complications and risks and leads to those underlying health conditions that we always hear about on the news where people have died of COVID. So there's an increased recognition from this horrible disease that there are existing health implications of living in a bad environment and living with bad air. And that's reinforcing the idea that we must do something about that, must clean up that aspect and many other aspects of our environment. Another recognition that's grown significantly is that there's a relationship between zoonosis, the chance of a disease jumping from animal to human, and the environment. And this and many other such diseases are probably increased in their likelihood of occurring because of the environmental degradation that we've caused on our planet. So particularly deforestation, the closer interactions of humans and life, is leading to greater zoonotic risk now than we had in the future, increasing our motivation to steward our environment better. There's a relationship there with climate, that as climate warms, we get an increased risk of zoonosis, particularly from vector-borne diseases like Zika and West Nile disease, which are transported to higher latitudes, including the UK, as we see a warmer climate into the future. Another reason why we should care about controlling climate. Those are two somewhat negative reasons why we care more about health now because of COVID. There's also a positive outcome, I think, and Stephanie's touched on this already, talking about nature. What was the word you used? Naturephilia. And I think we see that a great deal in our society now, that people have really recognised how much they enjoy being out in environments and seeing green things around them. There's already strong evidence for there being an explicit link between both physical and mental health and your access to the environment. A statistic I like is the strong anti-correlation between antidepressant use and green space. People use way fewer antidepressants if they're exposed to green space in their life. So I think this recognition has been dramatically enhanced, and we can use that to build in new policy directions. One area, for instance, is I think there's a much greater recognition of the importance of peri-urban space, when we have these green spaces in our cities or on the edges of our cities that people can get to and use. We perhaps don't treasure as much as we do our national parks or some of our other green spaces. So the third strand that I'll perhaps touch on before closing now is the issue of food and food supply. And here I think that the lessons that we can learn are really quite difficult to tease apart and difficult to see where we are going to head with this. We clearly have recognised that food supply is vulnerable because of the COVID outbreak. Now, one response to that would be to think rather nationally that we need to grow more food and be more self-sufficient in individual nations. And that response would lead to a land use pressure. If we're trying to grow more trees for our climate and grow more food at the same time, then we'll have a competition between those two. But that's still quite likely an outcome. Another possible approach is we might say, well, we're not growing our food very efficiently. We want to make food more efficiently and have a more efficient system. Why are we still picking our fruit and vegetables in fields with migrant labourers rather than in factories or in vertical farms with robots? So we could start to ask questions about, are there different ways to produce food? And those areas where we control greenhouse gas and control the environmental damage of food production in a much greater way in the future. So I think that the recognition of the food supply challenge is going to cause some policy drivers that are currently quite difficult to predict, but I think very interesting in how they interact with the environment. I've been through the areas where I see the biggest sort of change in mindset as a consequence of the COVID outbreak from an environmental context. I do think in government generally that there is a very strong sense that we don't want to go back to the same old normal. We want to see learn from this of lockdown and the process of dealing with the COVID response. And that really there's a mindset that we would like to see green renewal, and we'd like to see some of the desires that the speaker recognised the UK goes into renewal post-COVID. And I think that is tempered, and people are made aware of that need by the fact that there's widespread recognition that climate and biodiversity loss, as Stephanie has already said, are bigger challenges than COVID. They just happen more slowly, so they need more long-term action than the short-term action on COVID. So I'll leave my remarks there. Thank you.